A summer in Wisconsin that included tornadoes, that included flooding, that included hailstorms have left homeowners wondering what their insurance coverage does and does not do, whether or not it is adequate or not. And if you have questions about homeowners insurance today, we invite you to our conversation. I'm Lee Rayburn, and our guest is Michael Riley, retired Madison attorney. His practice focused on obtaining fair compensation for folks who suffer injuries due to negligence. He also represented clients in insurance coverage issues, mediation, and arbitration. He is of counsel attorney at Axley Law Firm in Madison, and you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also send us an email to talk@wpr.org. And Mike, welcome back to the show.
Well, thanks, Lee. Great to be here.
Always a pleasure to have you, even if it has to do with homeowners insurance. But as I've asked around over the last few days, unless you need it, I don't feel a lot of people really think about it. It's something that goes on the back burner until, of course, it catches on fire. And then all of a sudden, you want to know exactly what's in there. But I, you know, seeing some of the horror stories from the Fox Valley after the tornado damage, it really seems to me that it pays to take the time to know your homeowner's insurance policy, to keep it up to date, and to be ready if or when the time comes.
You know, obviously, for most people, their home is the biggest asset they have.
Yes.
Most of us aren't Elon Musk, and, you know, we don't have billions. We've got a home that's probably two-thirds
that's
of
our equity.
What we're worth. It is. And so protecting that is really important. We talked a little bit about the difference between homeowners and auto. Auto insurance is pretty straightforward. It really is. You've got some limits. You get collision or, you know, comprehensive in your liability, and you can look at it and pretty know what you have. Homeowners is just a different animal completely. I had showed you just before we started the endorsement list from a policy.
It looks to be about 50, 60 items long.
And there's nothing comparable with auto insurance. The other thing is that, truthfully, given what you're protecting, it's really cheap to buy homeowners compared to auto. My own policy.
That's true.
I spend about $5,000, which is an awful lot, but $3,000 of that is for auto coverage.
Yeah.
And my homeowners for two homes, my principal home and a small cottage we own, is $845, and that's with some additional coverages added on. So
I think, you know, the next question most people would want, Mike, is who's your insurance agent?
Yeah, well, it is Houseman. A little plug for Houseman Insurance. They're great folks. But, you know, so let's talk about that for a second, because auto insurance, and I know you mentioned you buy that online.
I got it online because I bought it for the cost,
and I
not
think
the coverage.
Most people do. You know, I always love it when companies say, people who switch saved. Well, of course they did, because why do you switch? You know, you only switch because you want to pay less money. And with car insurance, I don't think it's nearly as big an issue. With homeowners, I really think buying through an agent is important. Independent agents represent a number of different companies, and I think that is something of an advantage. But certainly companies like American Family, which is a great local company, have captive agents. Whichever way you go, go to an agent, talk to them about what you have, what concerns you have, what, you know, special risks. If you look at your policy, among other things, there are numerous different limits for contents in your house. And that's just, I mean, if things like furs and jewelry, and there's a very limited amount of coverage.
It gets pretty specific pretty quickly.
It does, very quickly. And most insurance, you know, they tell you what they're going to cover, and then they sort of start taking things away. Homeowners is more like that, again, than auto insurance. There are a lot of exclusions. There are a lot of separate limitations, unlike auto insurance. And the only way to, I think, to really deal with that is to go through an agent to begin with. And you're obviously right, read your policy, know what's in there, but it really helps to make sure you know at the outset, because most of us, lawyers included, don't go back and read their policy every year.
Well, there's an admission, but it's also a little reassuring because my eyes glaze over. I don't understand the legalese of it all, but to have somebody to be able to explain it to you and somebody you can trust, you know, I don't know what that isn't worth to me.
No, I couldn't agree more. I think that's invaluable to do that. And I will say, I went back to reread my policy and look through a bunch of things. And I, as I told you when I came in, I thought, man, this is complicated. I'm so accustomed to dealing with auto insurance, which, again, is pretty straightforward.
Right.
And there are things there as well, but not nearly the complexity level of a homeowner's policy. So I do think it emphasizes the importance of talking to somebody before you buy, because otherwise the next time most of us pull out the policy is when there's a loss. And at that point, if you don't have the coverage you thought you had, it's a bit late.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the basics of homeowner insurance. You were talking about three basic parts to it: structural protection, personal property coverage, and then liability.
Right. And I think, you know, the structural protection is probably the most straightforward. I mean, that you've got a house, you want to make sure that your coverage you have is in effect replacement coverage, that you're not going to have somebody say, well, your house was only worth, and the way costs are escalating for any kind of building or repairs, it's really critical. Repairs usually are not the big problem, but again, you want to look, there is, I know in one of the policies I looked at, there's a limit on roof and what they'll pay for that. There are a lot of limitations on siding and what they'll do. One of the big changes I've seen is it used to be that if your roof was damaged and they couldn't match the shingles, that was it. I mean, they'd replace the whole roof. Now, many companies are seeking to simply replace parts that are physically damaged to the point where they might allow water to come in or, you know, create further problems for the house. And if that's the case, we had a big case with an apartment complex on the west side, and they had to pay $2 million, but we had to fight through an argument that it was perfectly okay to patchwork and put in shingles that didn't really match. Well, nobody wants that on their home.
Right.
I mean, and our argument essentially was, so if these are red, but you can put in blue and patchwork it, and that's okay. And at that point, they conceded and did the repairs. But, you know, with some of the provisions in some of these policies, that may not happen. I know in terms of at least metal siding, they now say they want something where it's not just dented, but there's actual penetration that would allow water to come in. And I had a good friend who had that problem, and we dealt with it ultimately. But
so cosmetic damage might not be enough to have a homeowner's insurance
kick in. It may not, and that's one of the questions I think you want to make sure you ask when you talk to your agent. If this happens, what are you going to do? And as you said at the outset, Lee, these events are coming more and more frequently.
Oh, man.
I mean, the hail damage particularly. And, you know, boy, I don't remember seeing that often at all. And now in the last few years, it seems like every other year or
someplace. You almost expect it at some point in the early summer seasons.
Yeah, absolutely.
At least in South Central Wisconsin. And you pay for it. So, but the other part of this is we saw a story from a report that said that homeowners insurance has gone up like 55% between 2017 and 2024 in Wisconsin, the premiums anyway.
They have. And, you know, part of the problem is we're paying for the sins of the coasts and other places where, you know, they have huge losses with the fires out west and, you know, the floods and hurricanes and everything in Florida. And, you know, if a company you're dealing with writes coverage in those places, even though your loss experience hasn't changed that much in Wisconsin, it's likely to get reflected to some extent.
This is insurance. This is what insurance does.
Yep.
It shares the burden, and we could be sharing the burden with some of the more extreme climate conditions in the country right now.
Yeah, absolutely. We actually have a home in Montana, or did. We gave it to our kids, but boy, the fires out there are frightening. We've never had one in our specific area. But there are a lot of huge homes out there, and they build them in the middle of the forest where they can't be protected. I mean, there's really no possibility if there's a fire protecting them. And unfortunately, that ripples through to all of us.
As part of the premium cost of homeowners insurance today.
Absolutely.
What doesn't structural property generally cover when it comes to homeowners insurance? Is there something that people obviously miss?
I don't think there are a lot of big exclusions in the homeowners coverage itself.
Okay.
Those more apply to liability. And even with the personal property, the big thing there is there are a lot of sub-limits where you've got $100,000 for personal property. Sometimes it's half the value of the structure, however they frame it. But then there are a lot of subcategories. We talked about furs and jewelry and things of that sort.
Would those be excluded from a general policy?
They're not excluded usually, but they are. The coverage is very limited. I think in the one I looked at, it was $5,000. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it doesn't really take a lot if you've got some jewelry you inherited or just jewelry you purchased. You can get there very, very quickly. And they don't cover usually cash, gold, things like that. Don't keep them in your house because that's not covered usually or has a very low limit on what they'll cover.
Huh.
So, you know, they're just...
The cash under the mattress is not going to be covered by my homeowner's insurance?
Not if it burns. No, you're not going to be in great shape if any of that happens. I guess you're not in great shape if the mattress burns to begin with, but, you know...
That's interesting because it would generally apply, as I understand it, personal property coverage would apply to things like furniture, clothing, electronics.
Yep, things like that. There are limitations on electronics too.
Okay. How do I account for these things? Do I need to take photographs of everything? Do I need to upload it to the cloud? Is there an honor system for when things go south?
Well, generally, you know, they can go into a home. I mean, I suppose if it burns to the ground and everything's ashes, maybe. But for the most part, there's usually enough left. But it's a great idea. I mean, people should do that. And I'd say particularly with jewelry, you know, they love to ask for receipts. Who the heck keeps receipts for clothing or jewelry or anything? Nobody does.
Especially if it's an heirloom from the family. If it's been handed down,
yeah,
I don't have any idea where it came from other than my family.
And some of those things can be quite valuable.
Yes.
So, you know, paintings, anything. I mean, we've got a fair number of Oriental rugs that we bought over 50 years. And, you know, those can be fairly expensive. And so you need to be sure that whatever you have, particularly things that are unusual, not like furniture or clothing, which
right.
is pretty straightforward. I mean, unless you're buying Gucci and Da Vinci and that kind of thing. But
what's the best way to document personal property?
I think photos are great. And then
okay.
put them in. Obviously, the thing with photos, you either upload them to the cloud
yep.
or put them in your safety deposit box.
Well, we haven't had a fire in the cloud yet, but...
yeah, I know. I don't know. Given your prior guest and some of the things they're talking about, it terrifies you.
Yeah.
Oh, I wanted to say, just, you know, segueing from that, you know, he talked about the DocuSign stuff. Yeah. I get 10 DocuSign things a day. Well, not a day, a week, at least 10 that are frauds.
You're kidding me.
No, purport to be from my office. You know,
asking for a signature?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we just need you to sign this. These are just accounts. These are bills we're going to send out. You know, we just need you to sign off on this, and they're just complete frauds.
But I have not heard of the DocuSign fraud yet, and I'm hoping you'll let our previous guest from DadCap know about these because I wouldn't think DocuSign was fraud, and I just signed a bunch of them for the doctor's office. You know,
there are things that make sense. I mean,
right? I don't
this just
doubt
doesn't
that.
Make sense because we don't use DocuSign like that in my
but
office.
But generally in paperwork, Mike Riley, I'm just trying to get through it. I'm not thinking about it. It's a mindless task that's become part of everyday life, and I think that's where they get you. And when it comes to homeowners insurance, it's another one of those details that you think, you know, I don't have time of the day to go through all this fine print and all the things that are excluded. Let me reintroduce you. Mike Riley, our guest of counsel attorney for Axley Law Firm in Madison, and you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. And speaking of which, let's go to Charles and Ripon next. Hi, Charles.
Hello, gentlemen. I have sort of a comment or advice. It's kind of two-part. Your guest already mentioned the importance of buying homeowners insurance from an agent. And I would even add to that a local agent that knows your neighborhood or your community. The second point, and this is why I think that's important, is often there are riders that you need to add. And 30 years ago, I bought my first home in Oshkosh. And my agent was in Wautoma, but he knew the area. And he says, you know, he says, Oshkosh is notorious for having problems with sewer backup.
Oh.
He says, for $5 or $6 a year, it was so cheap. You need to add a rider that specifically covers sewage backing up either through the toilet or, in our case, it was the floor drain in the basement. So I go, okay, well, $5.
Yep.
That happened twice to us in the space of 15 years. And when we called the claims area, they were very specific about where that water came from.
Yep.
Did it come in a basement window or did it come up through the floor drain? And I had a picture of it bubbling up through the floor drain.
Yes.
So we were covered. And it was a mess because it was a finished basement. They had to cut 3 feet of drywall out. They had to remove the insulation. They put in big dehumidifiers, you know, for a month until they get all that moisture out. It all has to be resanitized. Had it done once, and like 5 years later, it happened again. Now, in defense of the city of Oshkosh, they've made some great improvements since then, and are really working on that. But if my agent hadn't recommended that, I had never owned a home before. I wouldn't have thought of it. And if he was not aware of that local situation, he wouldn't have known to recommend it, but he was. And so I think those are two important points when you're looking for homeowners insurance.
Great point, Charles.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, those are great points. Actually, we have a cottage at Green Lake, and I spend a lot of time in Ripon, so great town. Anyway, you know, that is a specifically excluded risk, is backup from your sewers.
So, see, flooding seems to be such a fine print thing when it comes to homeowners insurance.
It is.
And, you know, Charles was kind of alluding to it. Well, where did the water come in? Because that depends on what we'll cover. And for like $5 or $6 a month to have a sewage backup, I don't think I could put a price tag on something like that when it comes to coverage.
Absolutely. And a lot of water problems are not covered. Even surface water, subsurface water, there's a whole list of water things that are excluded under homeowners coverage, which would also exclude them in terms of your personal property, which often is the worst thing that happens because, you know, if you've got lots of stuff in a finished basement, often a big might be your TV room,
yeah.
You know, and whatever it is, there's likely a lot of stuff. And I can really identify with this because we moved into a house, first home we had, and we were naive about all that stuff. And we hadn't been in there 2 weeks. We had a major rainstorm, realized the backyard wasn't properly graded, and water was pouring in through our window wells. And I vividly recall taking these big, big pails, and, you know, it looked like Mickey Mouse. You
know? Just bailing out the house?
Yeah, I was bailing out the basement, and just like Mickey, it came in a lot faster than I could bail it out. But those are such great points and a perfect example of why you really need an agent when you buy homeowners insurance.
But not just for structural protection, as
no.
you mentioned, but also, and maybe more importantly sometimes, personal property.
Absolutely, because that's where an awful lot of the exclusions and limitations apply specifically to personal property. And, you know, if you don't discuss what you have and how much you have and how much it may be worth, you're likely to be left either without coverage or with coverage that is much more limited than what you really need.
And Charles, again, with the documentation that backed up his argument about the backup sewer, which may have saved him countless amount of money and a whole lot of hassle.
Yeah, that was really smart to have done that.
Yeah, thank you for the call, Charles. Let's go to Carrie in Platteville next. Carrie, hi.
Good afternoon. I'm calling regarding, we had storm damage a year ago in the spring. Well insured, no problem with the insurance company, worked with a contractor. It took, you know, typical dragging things out, but, you know, everything got done to my satisfaction. When it came time to pay the contractor, the contract, the organization I'd signed with had been acquired, so we kind of worked our way through that. I got a bill from a different company. But then here's where the rub came in. I asked for certificates. I asked for lien waivers from the subcontractors because there were three different subs, and other than there's only one of them that I got his card and that sort of thing. The other ones, I don't even know who they were. So I requested lien waivers to make sure those folks had been paid and was kind of greeted with, I don't know if they call it gaslighting. It's like, oh, we never do those, never heard of those before or whatever. Was I being unreasonable to request lien waivers situation like that?
This has come up in one of our home improvement shows before, and I think lien waivers are a great way to keep yourself protected, right?
Absolutely.
If a contractor says we don't do something like that, that would probably be a red flag about the contractor.
No reputable contractor should have a problem with that. And I can't imagine people saying we've never had that issue arise. You've got to be kidding me. I mean, you're not protected. You know, if people who have actually done the work have a lien, then, you know, you need to get that lien waived. And I can't say that I know specifically what liens you might have had attached, but certainly you're only protecting yourself, and what you're asking is completely reasonable, and their response is, in my mind, completely unreasonable. And I think, you know, I talked to your prior guest, who was great.
Michael Domke from DadCap.
Yeah, I'd give them a call and say, what's going on? Because I think, you know, I suspect they could perhaps do something about that. There's actually a statute on theft by contractor. I don't think this, you know, really reaches quite that. But there certainly are legal remedies, and I'm shocked that they would cavil over doing that. It's such a reasonable and easily complied with request.
And not the first time it's come up on this show, Kerry. So thank you so much for calling. And, Mike, I appreciate that answer. With Kerry storm damage, is there are there exclusions and fine print when it comes to what's covered and what's not? Does it depend on what kind of storm it is or the damage itself? And are those some of the exclusionary things?
Some of the water stuff could be if what you're having is simply water. Now, I presume that this was, I don't think we get, and water, even if it's wind-driven, they talk about that exclude that. I mean, that can be excluded
What's
as well.
What's wind-driven water? Subsurface water, what are these things?
We don't have hurricanes, but I suppose if you had a tornado or, you know, if you simply had a storm with straight-line winds of 30, 40 miles an hour, it could certainly damage your shingles or do other damage. You know, hail's probably the classic one around here that we see. I don't think with a tornado, there shouldn't be a lot of issues about the destruction. I mean, that should be covered. But you know, when you get to water, that is a much closer question. And again, we had talked briefly, you and I, about hail.
Yeah.
And the thing that they've done now, it used to be that if you had significant cosmetic damage and they couldn't match the shingles, they couldn't just repair piecework over the roof. They had to repair the whole thing. And we had some cases where that was an issue, and we got them to repair the entire roof. But now they really talk more about functional damage. Specifically with metal siding, they say there has to be penetration. It can't just be dents. Well, you know, gosh, you really want your home, you know, with the whole side, you know, dented, or, you know, two or three sides dented.
Pockmarked
you
house.
Want your roof with some blue shingles and some gray ones. I mean, nobody wants that. So again, that's something to talk to your agent about at the outset and say, what if this happens? How is this going to be covered under your policy?
But when it comes to things like flood damage, Mike, it's not like a homeowner's insurance policy is going to cover it. I mean, there's a national flood insurance program for things like that.
Exactly, and that's what you need to check. I mean, particularly if you're in a floodplain. But just more generally, if there's we've seen flooding, I mean, not just in Texas, we've seen it here.
Uh-huh.
We just had the thing in the Grand Canyon, which wasn't a property issue. It was tragic. But, I mean, floods happen in places you don't expect them to happen.
Which could also mean outside of a floodplain these
Absolutely.
Days.
Absolutely. I remember vividly, whatever it was, 10 years ago, I guess not that vividly, or I'd remember the date. But I remember 10 years ago when we had the horrific rain. And Black Earth Creek, which is generally you can hop across, was 20 feet wide and took out huge sections of railroad tracks. And I'm sure nobody who lived near that creek ever envisioned that happening. Yeah, and it did. So, again, you just need to know. And if you have to buy flood insurance, again, I don't believe that's very expensive. Homeowners generally isn't. So anyway,
I want to stop right there, but I want to continue on this because water damage seems to be a big gray area that I'm having trouble sort of picturing in my mind, and whether or not I could even get flood insurance if I'm not in a floodplain, even if it might flood there someday. And how do I decide what kind of risks I'm willing to take with homeowners insurance and which I want to make sure get covered? And you can join our conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And you can send an email to talk@WPR.org. Our conversation with Michael Riley continues next. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to WPR News. The storms across northeastern Wisconsin earlier this summer left an aftermath of severe weather that had brought heavy rain, rising rivers, flooding, wind damage, tornadoes, you name it. They saw it, and then they had to find a way for their homes to recover from it. And that would include finding out what was and what was not in their homeowner's insurance policy. That's what we're doing today, this hour. I'm Lee Rayburn, and our guest is Michael Riley. He is of counsel attorney at Axley Law Firm in Madison, answering your home insurance policy questions today. While not able to give out specific legal advice, can tell you what to look for, what to ask about, and how to best protect you and yours at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234, or email talk@WPR.org. And I do have an email here, but you found the provision. We're talking about water damage and how detailed that can get in a homeowner's insurance policy. Mike, what did you find?
So what I found is it's under exclusions.
Okay.
You know, and most people don't pay much attention to those. And again, the exclusions in a homeowner's policy are legion, a lot more than there are in an auto policy. Again, so this is the exclusion in this particular, this happens to be West Bend, who I'm covered with.
Okay.
But it's that's a very common exclusion. So it says water damage means we do not insure for loss caused directly or indirectly by any of the following. And then they say water damage. Water damage means flood, surface water, waves, tidal water, overflow of a body of water, or spray from any of the above, whether or not driven by wind. And then it goes on to say water or waterborne material which backs up through the sewers. And our friend that just called earlier,
Charles.
And it all, and that's why he bought that rider, which gave him the coverage which would otherwise be excluded. And then it says water or waterborne material below the surface of the ground, including water which exerts pressure on or seeps or leaks through a foundation.
Oh.
So you've got all these exclusions that—
That sounds like everything water is, though. That sounds like all water.
It's an awful lot of it. And again, if you can, and I mean, that's something you need to talk to an agent about. Can I buy a rider that'll give me coverage for this? And he said his was $5, which is an incredible
years
bargain.
Ago, so.
And again, as I said at the outset, it's relatively cheap coverage. It's a fourth of what my auto coverage is.
Right.
And my home obviously is worth 10 times what any of my cars are, at least. So, you know, it really is, it's worth being sure that anything that is any reasonable likelihood of happening is covered. Because, you know, that's what insurance is for. Nobody buys their house, you know, house insurance thinking the house is going to burn down.
Right.
And obviously it doesn't most of the time, but there are all these other losses that can cause damage and very significant damage that may well be excluded unless you can ensure that you have a rider that will provide coverage for those.
We were also talking how flooding doesn't necessarily just constrain itself to floodplains anymore. Under the National Weather Flood Insurance Program, Mike, do you know, can you get national flood insurance through this program if you're not in a floodplain?
You know, I'm not sure about that, honestly. Yeah. I just don't know. I'd certainly check. I mean, we were talking about Black Earth Creek. You know, I mean, I used to go fish with my dad there when I was a kid, and, you know, I could wade across, heck, parts of it I could hop across. And, you know, and then we had that raging flood where it took out the railroad tracks, I'm sure damaged a lot of homes that never, ever thought that they'd have to worry about a flood in this really small body of water.
So we've taken a look at some of the limits to personal property and structural protection. The other aspect of homeowners insurance or general category would fall under liability. What does liability cover, Mike, generally speaking, and what does it not?
Yeah, the cover is, the not is probably a lot lengthier than the cover, as is often the case with homeowners. And basically what it covers, it never covers automobiles. I mean, that's a separate thing. One of the things you need to know, if a lot of people have boats, does it cover the boat? If there's a boating incident, which can cause really serious injuries, there are a lot of exclusions in the policies I've looked at where they'll cover small boats, they'll cover sailboats, but as soon as you introduce a larger motor, then there are exclusions. There are exclusions on length, there are exclusions on horsepower. That particular policy says if it's got to be 50 horses or less, or they won't cover any liability. And, you know, I've handled boating claims. I mean, you can have terrible injuries from propellers, just awful.
They can be fatal.
And, you know, we had that case down in Lake Geneva, which was horrific, where the guy had the whole family out, had too many people on the boat. The boat capsized and several people drowned. And, you know, that kind of thing, if that's what home, you know, that's what the liability portion of homeowners you'd think would cover. Because it really covers personal conduct other than the operation of an automobile.
Hmm.
The other one that I think is a big concern is they generally don't cover wreck vehicles. So, you know, ATVs, four-wheelers, that kind of thing aren't covered. I've also seen some provisions, at least, which talk about coverage for, you know, the operation of a motorized bicycle, because those have become
E-bikes.
Increasingly common. And, you know, we've both seen plenty of them.
They're doing 30 miles an hour like a motorcycle down a bike path, and you wonder, is that safe? And if something happens to them, where's the protection? Or they hurt somebody else.
Well, particularly if they hurt somebody else.
Yes.
I mean, that is, you know, that is a really... My wife and I do
hadn't
a lot of walking.
Of that.
We do a lot of walking on bike paths, and some of these people fly. My grandson's got a good friend who's a real good kid, but he's got one of these things that does 35 miles an hour.
Here's the thing I always say as they're passing by. It's not a bike if you don't pedal.
No, I agree. And a lot of these, they don't. Not you. We all see them every day. They're just whizzing around on these things. So, you know, that's another area where if you have a wreck feel, you want it covered. If you have a particularly larger boat, check with your agent.
If I have a tree in my yard that falls because of storm damage into my neighbor's yard and causes damage there, am I covered generally under a homeowner's policy?
You probably would be.
Okay.
Generally speaking, there's no liability for that unless you have a dead tree that you've just neglected. I mean, if you have a big storm come along and your tree, just because it's on your property and ends up on his roof, doesn't make you liable, and you probably wouldn't be.
I've seen stories though where, you know, your tree fell on my property, you owe me for this damage.
Yeah, but you don't generally. I mean, there's a lot of those myths about, you know, it just, I've seen those claims too. You know, there are always going to be exceptions, and I'd never say, oh, that's nothing to worry about. But I would say it's not a big worry at all. I don't think that's, and generally speaking, he's going to have coverage for his house or his fence,
right,
or whatever goes. And, you know, then it's up to the insurance company would have to subrogate, which means they'd take an assignment from him. They're not going to do that on something like that.
I appreciate that, Mike.
Never seen that. Again, I try never to say never, because
right,
you know, the
this
world
is, the
is
law.
A big place, and there are a lot of lawyers in it.
The world is a big place, and there are a lot of lawyers in it.
Spoken now, if only like a, we'd heeded Shakespeare's advice, right? Yeah.
Spoken like an attorney, Michael Riley, our guest of counsel for Axley Law Firm in Madison. Back to your questions about home insurance policies, what they do and don't cover, cost, coverage, you name it. We'll go to 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or talk at WPR.org. Let's go to Vivian in Green Bay next. Hi, Vivian.
Hi, I have a general question and a specific one, and both relate to pets in the home, not breeding animals, pets. One is, if my pet bit someone, if my pet damaged something in another person's property, and then is there any coverage for the loss of a pet? And all mine are rescues,
yeah. So
the cost is minimal.
Oh, I was going to say the cost is priceless for replacing a pet.
Yeah.
My pet's worth millions of dollars, Vivian, and I'm betting yours are too.
And as you can imagine, the insurance industry does not share that noble sentiment. That generally, coverage for pets is excluded. Coverage for the replacement of a pet,
yes,
if the pet's lost, that's generally excluded. The other question, though, is one that's a significant question for a couple reasons. One, under Wisconsin law, if your dog bites somebody, you are essentially liable, period. There's arguments about, you know, if there was contributory negligence, if somebody's baiting your dog, could that make a difference? Yeah. But the law makes you strictly liable for your pet biting someone. So you may have kept your pet, you know, they may have been on a leash. They may have been a backyard covered by
Doesn't
a fence
matter.
And they somehow got out. Doesn't matter. So you really, you know, you just, one, train your pets. You know, well-trained pets don't bite people. They just don't. You know, and I know people are going to say, well, I didn't still. Some breeds are just, I mean, I know there are people who love pit bulls and think they're great animals. They can just be dangerous, and particularly because some animals, even if you don't think they're more prone to attack, when they do attack, they do a lot of damage. I had a case not long ago where a young girl was at a rugby. She played for rugby team. They were at the game. This other gal brought her dog to the game, and the dog literally bit her nose off.
Oh.
And the doctors did tremendous job with plastic surgery, but still, I mean, horrific injury.
I had a friend who was a dog walker who had the same experience, not entirely off, but got a little too close to the face to this dog, and then...
And the big, you know, one of the really frightening things is the bites that are worst are kids, because kids are right down there with the dog, and they're right in the dog's face. And they don't have a sense of caution, most of them, about dogs. And when they get bit, they're getting bit in the face. They're, you know, I mean, it's really bad. And it can be, you can have, well, as you can imagine, the girl who lost her nose, I mean, that was, as I recall, something in the range of $500,000. And if you look at a lot of the policies, including both of the ones I'm looking at, there's a dog bite limit of $25,000. Now, it may be that that only applies to a dog that's bitten before. It says vicious dogs, but the definition of a vicious dog is one that's bitten anybody at any time. And that, under state law, enhances the damages significantly, too. So if your dog is bitten before, I know people love their dogs.
Yeah.
You know, my advice would be do not keep a dog that's done that. Because once that happens, the damages are going to multiply if somebody is bitten. And
I never thought of a dog as a liability before ever in my life. And now I don't think I'll be able to see it the same way again.
I love dogs. I grew up with dogs. We own two. We haven't for a long time because we travel a lot. I pet every dog I see. Unless they're growling and straining at the leash to get at me.
But Mike, the homeowner's insurance policy will cover that sort of...
It'll cover it, but
up to a point.
And that
point might be pretty limited.
Yep. And again, particularly if your dog has a prior bite, that's where there's clearly a limit. And that's really important to know that and to make sure that if that's the case, boy, you have to, if you're going to keep that dog, he better be under lock and key or, you know, walked late at night when you're not going to see somebody, because the danger is the danger to you and your assets is great. And obviously nobody wants, one, they don't want your dog put down, which can happen. And two, you don't want to lose your dog or lose the ability to interact with your dog freely. So
this liability then really is an important part of the three pillars of homeowners insurance and really can help you and your bottom line.
It can help you a lot. And I mean, it's anything, you know, if somebody's injured on your premises, we had a case not too long ago where they had this family had a home with a lot of property around it. They had a sledding party. And I think they thought normally most recreational activities, there's immunity for that under state law for most recreational activities on your property. The odd thing is if people were trespassers, you would have recreational immunity. But if you invite people in and they're social guests, then you don't have recreational immunity. And in this case, the guests hit, they had put up a phone pole with a light on it to light their sledding hill. Somebody hit the pole, was injured pretty badly, and, you know, it was a big claim.
Yeah.
So there are things like that. If people are injured, you know, if your stairs aren't to code and somebody trips and is injured, trips in a hole, I mean, there are things that, you know, where you could be liable for a guest on the property. There's some medical payments coverage for that that's built into the policy, which is, but it's, again, a pretty low limit. Usually it's around $5,000, which... and ER visits now can cost 20. So, you know,
I feel like I would be asking about the cost of coverage for increasing my liability and what that would mean for the premiums for my homeowner's insurance.
It would probably, and again, I haven't checked that specifically, right. But I'm sure it would be pretty limited. One of the things that we talk about a lot with auto, but it's a good idea for homeowners too, is you can buy an umbrella policy. Mine is for $2 million. I think it costs $120 or under. It's just not a lot of money. And again, if you've got limited assets, maybe that doesn't matter.
Right.
But just having a home these days, boy, you know, that's a significant
asset. Yeah.
Very quickly. So, you know, and you don't want to put it at risk. So that's, again, worth asking about. See how much it would cost.
Yeah.
See what it covers. One other thing, Lee, that I think is worth talking about is liability coverage, unlike auto, which you can only have your kid on the policy for so long. With liability, it goes out to 29 if your kid's
29
at school,
years old.
At school.
Okay.
And one other issue that comes up is, okay, at school, he's still covered. There may be limits to what he's covered for. One concern I always have is parents frequently sign on a lease to guarantee a lease.
Because, right.
You know, most landlords here Co-signer. In Madison are
sure.
going to require that for a college kid. The question is, what happens if, I've seen this multiple times, kids leave a box on the stove and forget to turn the stove off and the house burns down? What, you know, what the house or the thing, that can be a lot of money. And that may or may not, you know, that probably is covered up to a certain limit. But again, something worth talking about. Think about renter's insurance, because, again, there's limits on all kinds of electronics and things like that. And kids at college all have a ton of that. And that may or may not, you know, you may not have enough coverage for that. Renter's insurance, again, is pretty cheap. Mm-hmm. Certainly worth asking when you're asking about the homeowners. Just say, hey, my kid's in school or he's going to be. What would it cost to get renters? Does it make sense to do that? So, you know, I think that's just one more thing to think about. There are a lot of things potentially under liability coverage. It's basically personal conduct. I mean, if you we've had cases where people hit someone with a golf ball and, you know, they get injured pretty severely. And that's,
I didn't mean to laugh, but it happens.
It does. And I had a lady who was sunbathing in her backyard.
Oh no!
In a golf course, she was on the dog leg. Her backyard was right,
man,
and somebody
bad
hit
place
her,
to
and
be.
Again hit her in the head, and it wasn't fatal, or you know, she. But I mean, it was a pretty serious injury. So you likely would be covered for that. You know, if you're participating in a sporting event.
That's
and,
a whole
you know,
lot more
you,
than homeowner's insurance.
You
then.
It is. You cause an injury to somebody that's negligent. You can't, if you hurt someone, you can't punch someone and say, okay, I've got homeowners. You know, anything that's intentional is not
well,
covered.
I'm glad you said that outright, yeah. Mike. That's good to know. And Vivian, thanks again for the call. Let's get to Gene in Iron River next. Gene, hi.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I don't know if you've covered this subject, but I just tuned in. But I have a second home up in the North Woods, and it's in a lot of trees. Now, those trees have dead branches, and there's a few dead ones. I do have homeowners insurance, which covers storm damage. Would those be covered? Let's say a big branch falls on it. Or am I responsible for having somebody shake all those dead branches? That'd be quite a price to do that.
I think the simple answer is no, you don't have to take them down. It's one of the things they actually exclude is coverage for trees and bushes and things like that under your homeowners.
Really?
So you don't, I mean, if you lose a tree in a storm, they probably aren't going to replace the tree. But if the tree falls on your house, you should be covered for that.
Even if it's dead and Gene knows it's dead? And
yeah, I always, you know, caution somebody to make sure you talk to an agent who does this stuff every day and be sure. But I think generally speaking that it is not, that's not excluded from coverage, because trying to sort out what's dead and what isn't and how dead and should you, you know, I think that
it sounds like things lawyers would do, though, Mike.
Yeah, well, you know, we like to count the angels on the head of the pin, but, you know, I think insurance companies may be even worse about that than we are.
I've got another tree question here from Jay in Two Rivers, so let's go there next. Hi, Jay.
Good afternoon. I asked my insurance agent about tree coverage or damage from tree coverage, and he indicated that in Wisconsin, if my trees fall on our neighbor's property, that they are responsible for the damage. And if a neighbor's tree falls on my property, it's my responsibility. And I had an afterthought that I didn't ask him, and I'm wondering if that is true in all cases or if there are exceptions.
I think the only real exception would be if you've got a tree, like the last caller says, some of them are dead. If you've got a tree that's obviously dead, I think at some point you could be found responsible for that. But again, he's going to have coverage for his house.
Right.
They're going to pay it. So basically, the only concern would be, is the insurance company, after they pay his loss, going to come back and say, well, you should really compensate us? And I think the answer is that's really unlikely. Companies will subrogate on some things, but they don't like to work that hard at it. And it just, I think it would be very unlikely in that situation that, you know, some would be responsible, unless it just was obviously a rotten tree that was tottering in the wind and you didn't bother to do anything.
Jay, you and I had the same question. Before we run out of time, I want to get to Steve in Hudson, too. Hi, Steve.
Hi. A number of years ago, I had my house burned, and it was a total loss. But the insurance company, they had no problem paying for the structure. But for the personal property, they wanted me to list everything that I'd lost and then go and buy it and send them a receipt. And as I sent the receipt, then they would reimburse me for the coats and the pots and pans and so on and so forth, which seemed to be pretty ridiculous. But I talked to a retired insurance agent who told me if the amount of my loss was greatly exceeded the amount of my coverage, they would be likely to write me a check. And so I made a list of everything I lost, and it exceeded my coverage, and they paid off. And I'm wondering how common is a policy like that, where you have to actually go and buy things and then send them a receipt and then they'll replace them?
Yeah, I think it's very common. There's something kind of similar with cars too. If you replace the car, but again, it's a much lesser issue generally with car insurance, and it's a real issue not with the home, as you said. That usually is reasonably straightforward. You want to make sure you have replacement coverage, so what it's going to cost you to rebuild that or redo it will be covered, not what somebody thought it was worth on an assessment. But in terms of personal property, they want to be sure that you're really replacing this stuff. And again, a lot of that is you've got a list, but, the list is they want to be sure what your list is really what you had. And I think that's part of the reason why they do it that way, is just to ensure that people aren't essentially making a profit by not replacing stuff but claiming it. Whatever the reasons, I think that is a fairly common provision. But again, something to discuss with your agent.
Yeah, I mean, when we started this conversation, when I was getting ready for this mic today, my thought was, all right, I've learned a thing or two and I need to look at the policy. I need to update the policy. But after spending an hour with you, I need to talk to an agent about looking at my policy and then updating my policy if necessary. I need somebody to explain it to me in ways that I understand about what real threats can be about liability and structural property, property and personal property. And I need to know what kind of cost benefit analysis can be done and how an insurance agent who does this every day sees this policy, what's excluded, what's included, and how I'm protected.
Now, absolutely. And certainly what we've done today hopefully has been helpful, but, we're skimming the surface. I mean, there are so many different potential issues.
We did so much water. I feel like we got through a little bit more water. I mean,
right.
There's a lot of water in there
that's
today.
That's right. And we all know about those exclusions. So, talk to an agent and, ask the questions that are particularly relevant to you. It's just so important to do that. And, again, it's your most valuable asset. Yeah. And your possessions are, worth, coverages are often half the value of the house. And the other thing, the point that you just made, Lee, is update. You know, most of us insure with the same company for 20, 25, 30 years, and we don't update.
When's the last time you've updated? Mike Riley, thank you so much for an enjoyable hour about insurance. I thought that was pretty neat. It was entertaining.
As always, we had a great time. Thank you.
Indeed. Michael Riley is of counsel attorney for Axley Law Firm in Madison. Thanks to our team today, Joel Patenaude, Clara Neipert, Jeff Robbins, our executive producer, Jill Nadeau. Don't miss Garden Talk tomorrow from 11 to 1 with Jill. I'm Lee. And thanks to you for joining the conversation, your calls, your emails, and listening. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to WPR News.